Why Revive After the Dance? Well, completely unique, I think, to other plays by Rattigan. This is an incredibly well-crafted play that has that literally got lost. And it's essentially, it's a love story, and it's about what happens when you fall in love with the wrong person. Crucially, it was set between the wars, just before the Second World War. So it's also a play about what happens when two generations clash with the oncoming Second World War, and how different generations deal with what they think the responsibilities are for society, knowing that that's on its way. What's sort of fascinating, I think, about this particular play is the fact that it essentially got lost all these years ago. And it was Rattigan's second play. He had a huge success with his first play, which was a very light comedy that ran for thousands of performances. I mean, it was a really very surprisingly huge hit for a very, very young writer. I think he was 25 when it happened. So come the second play, all the critics, journalists were asking, can he really do it? Can he do it again? And the critical response to After the Dance was very, very, very warm, and said, not only can he can do it, but he can do it with real depth, and he can do it seriously. He's not just a light, fluffy playwright. However, within 2 months of it opening, the Second World War was declared, and completely understandably, the play closed very early. And he took that to mean that it was a failure in comparison to French Without Tears. So when it came to him putting together his first collection of plays, he didn't want that to be part of it, because he didn't want to be seen as having potentially any flawed pieces of work within his collection. And so as a result, it literally got put to one side and forgotten for many, many years. And it was picked up, I think it was picked up by the BBC in 1994 when they made a TV version of it, which is obviously a completely different way of looking at it, which is, you know, so very interesting that there was then one production, touring production by Oxford Stage Company, a little bit, well, nearly 10 years in fact after that, and then here we are, nearly 10 years on from there, putting certainly the first, it's the first ever revival, major revival in London since it was originally done in 1939.
And do you think it's going to remind people, or even establish for people, the fact that Rattigan, who was for many decades in a sense dismissed as slightly old hat, do you think it will remind London audiences how sharp Rattigan could be as a writer, do you think?
Obviously, I hope it will. Personally, I think that the Almeida production in the early 90s of The Deep Blue Sea put Rattigan into a new category, and we completely, I think, have revisited him since then as a result of that. But what's really exciting about this is that this is the first time anyone's done it with this play, and I think, having done The Deep Blue Sea myself, that this play has the depth and the craftsmanship behind it that is very similar in many ways to The Deep Blue Sea, and I think it's as good as The Deep Blue Sea. And so obviously it's a massive privilege to be able to put it on the National Theatre's, you know, one of the main stage. And obviously I hope that the audiences do absolutely see him not just in a new light, but genuinely, it's almost as though it's a new play is being put forward for him.
Could you just give a quick synopsis of the leading characters in the play? Who's the centre of attention here?
Well, the absolute central character in the play is David Scott Fowler, who some people draw parallels between him and was he not centred on F. Scott Fitzgerald, who, of course, Rattigan knew very well and knew his life story very well. And a lot of other people also have said that it's very, very close in many ways to Rattigan himself. And having been through the huge success of French Without Tears, and suddenly earning a huge amount of money, and the way that he chose to live his life, there are certain parallels that it's very hard not to draw on, I think. Although, again, if you don't want to make them or you can't make them, it doesn't diminish in any way your appreciation of the character, who, you know, at the end of the day, is just a... He's somebody that we would all recognise, whether you know the literary references or not.
Kind of core problem in one aspect of the piece is that a husband and wife aren't able to communicate with each other in an emotionally sincere way, because they have this expectation that really that would be very dull socially to do something as sort of commonplace as speak their true mind. So there's a strange game of not really admitting true feelings until it's too late. So there's something there about, really, I suppose, the whole generation that was perhaps very extrovert but completely clammed up emotionally.
Yeah, I think you have to ask why that particular generation got into this rut of behaving, and why they behaved like that, and therefore why the generation after that hit against that and behaved in a completely different way. And I think World War One is the obvious and completely correct reason for why that happened at all. And again, why the poignancy of the onset of World War II has such a profound effect on this particular group of people. Yes, you could argue that at the heart of it, this is a play about not just a husband and wife, but why a whole range of people can either miscommunicate or just simply not communicate with each other. But again, I don't think that's anything to do with the period that you couldn't translate to today. You know, you can't help but sit here and think, here we have a brand new government led by two extremely young men who are certainly needing, you know, today you hear on the news George Osborne telling us, giving us a little insight as to how much money the previous government were spending on taxis, for example. And the only way to respond to that is in a very conservative, with a small c, way, and say, well, that's shocking and we're not going to do it like that for this exact reason. And in that sense, that's exactly what is going on in the play. But I think that happens every single time you get a change in just in time, that inevitably, you know, in another 10 years, the next generation will have their own reasons for why the generations before them got everything wrong or did things, you know, not as well as they now can do, having learnt from what's gone before. So the clash of the two generations is also one of the absolutely beating heart, crucial dynamics within the play. Particularly when you can see sometimes quite clearly and other times very faintly how one generation is almost exactly replicating where the other generation, where they used to be, they've now moved on. And there are moments when I think the older generation look at the younger generation and they, for a split second, they realise that was me. And why haven't I still got those principles when I so clearly know that I had them? And the answer is, you know, life moves you on and things happen to you that you can never anticipate how you're going to deal with them until they happen in the moment. And then before you know it, you're looking back on it going, wow, that's what I chose to do. And that's, you know, it's very easy to be the incoming newborn generation and have opinions on how everyone's done it before you.
Is this a kind of personal mission for you to make sure it happens here at the National?
I wouldn't call it a personal mission, no. I mean, I love the play and I really wanted to put it on in a main stage in London. And I asked the National if they were interested in it. And Nick was really clear that if I had come to him asking to do the Deep Blue Sea, that's not a place for the National Theatre. That's not a play for the National Theatre to revive, because it doesn't need to be put on here. But the sort of special niche that After the Dance fits into, I think what it does, particularly as next year is a big year for Rattigan and the Rattigan estate, it being his centenary, it's fantastic that the National, in many ways, is kind of leading the way for what will soon become, you know, it's going to be a big moment in revisiting Rattigan as a playwright as a whole. And to start that off, A, at the National, and B, with a play that very few people know, is incredibly exciting and a real privilege.
What are the joys and challenges for a director approaching Rattigan? You clearly, I don't think, can relocate the action of After the Dance to a nightclub, or, you know, it has to be very specific to what Rattigan intended, is that right or not?
I think for me, certainly, one of the joys and one of the hardest things to get right, but essential things to absolutely get right when revisiting a text like this, is to recreate the world that he wrote it in, because it is a specific moment in time. And for me, if you take it out of that context, you lose so much of what the wealth that he brings to his analysis of human behaviour, human conditions, and simply how people communicate with each other.